Department is acting in good faith. Dick Durbin's introducing bills. They're trying to get Republican co-sponsors. God bless them. You know, but it is going to move. There's a commitment coming out of the White House. What Obama's Justice Department did on the Justice Department guidelines on medical marijuana just a few weeks ago, that was major. That was major. That was major. And what it does is it sends a signal to state government that it will be okay for them to get their hands dirty and begin to get involved in the business of medical marijuana. It means that to the extent that our evolution involves local government becoming involved in the regulation of this, because that's what's needed to legitimize our cause, that's what happened. That they can no longer say that the feds are against us. They can no longer say we can't do this because we don't know what the feds will do. It opens the door. Even the drugs are saying quietly so far, let the states deal with that marijuana issue. And you know, that's good enough by me. I'm not looking for Carl Lukowski to make any bold statements on marijuana. Keep talking about strength instead of incarceration. Keep talking. I'm looking for him to say those words, harm reduction, however. Yeah. Those are words that we need to hear coming out of the mouth of the drug czar and the president. Harm reduction. Harm reduction. You know, it's a good thing back 11 years ago, when Rudy Giuliani wanted to shut down methadone maintenance in New York City. The best thing that ever happened to methadone maintenance was Rudy Giuliani wanted to shut it down. Because all of a sudden, all the people, even those who were lukewarm about it, had to stand up and say, wait a second, it's got a role to play. And the media, every methadone story in the media was always a bad story about something bad happened. All of a sudden, massive public education, and Barron McCaffrey, one of the few good things he did as drug czar, he came to New York City, he visited a methadone clinic. You know what Carl Lukowski has to do? He's got to go visit a needle exchange program. That's what he has to do. Now, there's a bigger question, of course, about where are we headed? Where are we headed? Because, you know, in a way, our struggle is not just the struggle of the moment. It is the multi-generational struggle. It is, in part, about drugs, about the reality of all drugs, about the fact of the matter that not only have we never been a drug-free society, not only will we never be a drug-free society, but that, in fact, the diversity and variety of drugs is just going to grow and grow and grow. Turn on the television, which I don't do that often, but turn it on, and when you do, look at those commercials, one after another after another. Do you feel sad? Do you feel depressed? Anxious? Worried? Do you feel anything at all because we have a drug for you? Oh, yes. And you know, for better or worse, that is the future. We will have drugs being produced legally and illegally by multinational pharmaceutical companies and underground laboratories, producing things to make us go from sick to fine and from fine to better. That is the way to the future. And the question for us really is, how do we accept that reality? We know after decades of failure that we cannot build moats between ourselves and between our children and those drugs, between ourselves and those drugs. It doesn't work. It cannot happen. Who has the best access to drugs in America today? It's young people. Who had the best access 20 years ago? Young people. Who will have the best access today? Young people. We're not going to protect our kids by more and more people going to prison, by fantasizing about more and more voting. It's a powerful, magnificent drug. It's a drug which virtually every one of us is involved with. It is a drug which we love, which we cannot imagine living without, and also a drug that sometimes we wish we could do without. It is a drug that has created enormous mayhem and chaos and death and suffering, and also enormous pleasure and wonderment and all of these good things. What is that drug? The automobile. Now the fact of the matter is, we have no alternative but to accept the reality that automobiles are here to stay, and that we have no choice but to learn how to live with them so that they cause the least possible harm and the greatest possible good. The same harm reduction definition and challenge we apply to other things. Now I'll tell you something. If you look at the history of the automobile, at least in our society and some number of others in the last few decades, what do you see? You see more and more cars on the road, driving more and more miles, yet fewer people dying, but to embrace that reality, because the world of our children and grandchildren requires it. Now, what that means is being smart and sensible. The role of the criminal law in dealing with those automobile drugs is relatively minimal, limited to those who drink under the influence of our drug in order when they're utilizing that other drug, the automobile. But apart from that, criminal laws don't play that big a role. It's the same thing with our drugs, the drugs that we deal with in our movement, in our society, that ultimately, the role of the criminal law has to be at the edges for the people who are under the influence and put other people directly at risk. But we can accept the reality. We can accept the independence and the freedom of people to utilize these things, to consume these things as they wish, and to hold them responsible for the ways in which they use them. We can look for ways to make them safer to use. We can provide honest education, not airtight programs, but cultural-wide, society-wide education. Because ultimately, the best protection we have in moving forward into a world of ever more drugs is not a punitive system of criminal prohibition. It is the empowerment and the education of us, the consumer, of us, the human being, of us, the one who lives day in, day out, with our own pains, our own grievances, our own urges, our own everything, using these drugs for better and for worse, but learning to live with them so that they cause the least possible harm.
Many things. Look, sitting in this room are people from across the political spectrum.
sending this room are people from across the drug use spectrum and the drug law spectrum, right? We know all of this. They're sending this room are people who primarily fight about marijuana and others about harm reduction, others about methadone, and others about mandatory minimums, and others about psychedelics. And some of us want to elevate our struggle over others. That's okay in your own lives. But understand that we are all part of one struggle. Marijuana is moving hard and fast now. I can't believe it. That Gallup poll that came out a few weeks ago, did you see that? From 23% support for legalizing marijuana in 1983 up to 44% today. It's 54% out west. It's 53% among Democrats. It's over 50% among people under the age of 50. And the thing I can't figure out, you know, just 4 years ago, if you asked men and women about support for legalizing marijuana, there was a 10-point gender gap, with women 10% less likely to support legalizing marijuana than men. You know what else? That gender gap just disappeared in 4 years. I don't get it, but thank you, women. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to the marijuana thing. It's going to be rocky. Let's go to California right now. Richard Lee's put together an initiative, probably going to be on the ballot. Other of my allies are saying too soon, too fast, don't like the design. We can't control the whole thing. One way or another, there's more people fighting for this struggle. It's going to be rocky. Who knows? Look at the struggle for gay marriage right now. Step forward, step backward. This thing, you can't control this thing. We got to be smart, we got to be wise, but we got to continue to operate in good faith with one another. That's part of it. Because, you know, there's nobody you hate so much, nobody you hate so much in the struggle for freedom and social justice as your fellow ally. Why? Because, you know them too well. You know, you're fighting over turf and credit and funding and girlfriends, boyfriends, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, it's just part of what it is to be in there. Our opponents, our enemies, they're abstract. They're over there. They're over there. But, we have to keep it together. And on that topic so recently, I'm going to speak at conferences of doctors who specialize in pain medication. And I'm saying to them, listen, there is no basis in medicine or science or ethics for you not to utilize medical marijuana in treating pain and problems if you consider that an important option. And then that evening, I go and talk to a marijuana reform group. And I say, let me tell you something. There is no basis for you to demean and diminish the millions of Americans who rely legitimately on opioid medication to deal with their pain and their struggling. We're all in it. We've got a rational utilization about this. Yes, we can take opioids from more dangerous. Can overdose and die, but that doesn't mean they don't have legitimate uses for millions and millions and millions of people. Let's not make those separations. You know, the psychedelics area? Psychedelics, I love the psychedelics. I mean, part of it is the one area where you really talk good stuff about drugs. And now more and more literature emerging about dealing with pain and addiction and all sorts of other things. I mean, and I, it's not just the scientific, but I'm speaking personally, as somebody who will admit that psychedelics have played an important role in my life and my evolution. I mean, right now, I'd say in my life, you know, it's kind of, I regard psychedelics a little bit like the way I do fasting on Yom Kippur. Once a year, to cleanse the soul and open up the gym. Behind them, but president telling it the way it is, that we have a problem with punitive prohibition, and that harm reduction and marijuana decriminalization are part of the answer, and that we have to break the taboo, an open and honest dialogue, just as Senator Webb is calling for in Washington, D.C. I look at the changes in law in Mexico. I know they're not as great as we all said they were, but still, it's a step forward. And the change in Argentina, the emerging changes in Brazil, in Chile, in Ecuador, there is a movement happening. It's about harm reduction. It's about the legalization of coca, the legitimization of coca. It's about ending eradication campaigns. It's about opening up the debate on ending prohibition in America. There's been movement in Latin America in the last year like never, ever before. I look at Europe. You know, the Portuguese? Who knew? For a long time, it used to be the diversion, and it wasn't about drug courts. It was about if you get caught with drugs, we're not sending you to prison. We're going to send you to a panel of health experts that exist outside the criminal justice system to see if you need help. And if you don't, we will leave you alone, and if you do, we will try to figure out the best thing, and the cops don't got to get involved in the whole thing.
He saw that without lights up,
Like many businessmen, they underestimated the cultural power underlying that bubble. The way in which drug prohibition and the ideology behind it are deeply embedded in our culture and in our society. But he bet and he keeps betting. And when people say we're at a tipping point now, I don't think we're at a tipping point the way I would say it is. We're getting awfully close to something that looks a lot like a tipping point. It ain't there yet. We had 65% support for legalizing medical marijuana 13 years ago, and we still only have 14 states today. Right? We got a ways to go. But there is a bubble. Now we are building a movement. It is about individual freedom. It is about social justice. We are confronting ignorance and fear and prejudice and profit. When you're dealing with ignorance, what can you do? Educate. When you're dealing with fear, what do? You hold somebody's hand and you take them through, whether the fear is the fear of what their children might succumb to in their vulnerable teenage years or whatever it might be. When it's prejudice, you have to open things up and put on the table so people are obliged to lose their prejudices. We have to come out of the closet so people know the truth. But when it's profit, when it's vested interest, that's what we have to fight. Right now, the number one factor holding back reform in this is the prison industrial complex. It is the law enforcement establishment. Thank you. I want to thank and God bless all of us, great members of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who are critical about this. Our body.